dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks again to Mina Kimes for joining us here on Take Command. Of course, that's Logan Paulson. I am Craig Hoffman. So, Logan, a couple things that we want to just react to off the conversation with Mina. First and foremost, it's funny she brought up that email that I sent her last year, and I just listened to her show, and I was like, hey, something to keep in mind, because like Mina and I knew each other a little bit at that point. And so, you know, we occasionally exchange like commanders' emails, and I was like, just food for thought. Eric Bieniemy didn't do great last year. You know, schematically, I think that they can be a lot better. But to see just how much that impacted the team is, I think, something that is a really great lesson from last year. I think there's also, you know, hey, good quarterback play, very helpful. And sometimes we kind of pass by that. And then, you know, I know that something else that caught you a little by surprise was, you know, the credit level for Adam Peters on knowing that Jaden was the guy. Yeah. But let's start off with the offensive line. Like, what stood out to you about that conversation, especially when you think about projecting into this 2025 offensive line, which on paper is a lot better?
Yeah, it made me really think back to how good a job Cliff did with the offensive line, how good a job Adam did in terms of getting guys that were like serviceable starters. And again, like people sleep on, you know, they paid Allegretti like a swing guy, but he was good enough to start for them for a year. And then now they've kind of been able to, you know, relegate him at some point to being that true swing player. Same thing with Wiley. And I think they've just made really smart decisions, but I think Cliff understanding that position group like was evident every single week we watched. And it was something that we didn't really talk about, but like, and she touched on it a little bit, but the coaching impact on that, and you talked about in your email, like EB was pretty much like, hey, we're going to do the hardest thing for the offensive line more than anybody else in the NFL. I don't care if you're the Philadelphia Eagles, like you're going to look bad. Like if you look at some of the drop back passing statistics for the Eagles, when Hurts holds the ball a long time, like they have a crazy high pressure rate. Like that's just part of the nature of doing that in the NFL, right? Then you get Cliff in here with Jaden Daniels, who has this tremendous release. We're going to run a ton of quick game. We're going to run a ton of RPO. That's going to be like our foundational backbone. We're going to be crazy efficient at that. We're going to run the football, and then we're going to find and be selective about when to take shot plays down the field. And I look at Kyle. I look at Sean. I look at Andy Reid. I look at all these coordinators. They understand at the highest level, the hardest thing to do in the offense outside of play quarterback is play offensive line. So I need to protect that group. And Cliff did a great job of protecting them. And you see the impact schematically of what a coach can do to elevate a group. And I think that's just so important. And now I think the other point she brought up, which was interesting, is like, you know, like now it's a new group of guys coming together. Like, does Cliff change his philosophy? Does he kind of put them more out to dry because they're more talented? All those different things. However, I also thought she brought up a great point where she was like, bringing a veteran in with a young guy is a great way to mitigate some of that risk. So I give credit to Adam Peters in that regard, saying Adam did a great job identifying like this issue, doing something to correct it, and then moving on. So I think she brought up a lot of good points, but the one kind of takeaway that I feel kind of most strongly about is Cliff and his impact on that group and on the decisions that Adam made with the offensive line.
Totally. And just, it's something that you have really taught me, I think, over our years of doing this, is like count the dropbacks, count the situation. This goes to like all the third and fourth down stuff that we're talking about too, right? Is how do you avoid pure dropbacks where the offensive line just has to block? And it's like, hey guys, no play action. Yeah. The ball is not going to be coming out quickly. Like you are going to have to stand up and pass block for 3+ seconds here. And if you can avoid those situations, whether it's because schematically you do smart things and you provide help with chips, or your run game is efficient, or you're providing, you know, whatever, or you know, even like third and fourth down, we're going to go for it. If on fourth down, we can get to fourth and short, that adds some things to the playbook, because if it's third and eight, a lot of teams are like, oh, this is pure drop back. And you can run quick game and get six and know that you're going to go for it on fourth and two. that changes a lot of stuff for you. And so I think that's a really good point. And then it's going to be fun to me to see how much more Kliff puts on those guys' plates, knowing that, like, okay, my left tackle is no longer a third round rookie who's like doing a decent enough job. It's Laremy Tunsil, who at his best is the best in the entire league.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. So I'm really, it's cool. It was cool to see Kliff make those decisions, but now it's cool to think about what he can do, you know, to kind of like, cause you know, I was talking to somebody and they were saying, I was like, what's the biggest difference in San Francisco's offense, right? They're really struggling this year. Is it Brandon Ayuk being out? Is it Deebo Samuel's injury? Is it Christian McCaffrey being out? And the dude said to me, he was like, Trent Williams is not out there. And Trent Williams is a playmaker at the left tackle spot. It lets you do so much different stuff with the protections. He's a playmaker. And I think like that's what this gives you. And so I do think Kliff understands that. I think he's aware of that. I think that's one of the reasons Adam was so aggressive in bringing that type of player in. And then you say to yourself, okay, now what can he do? Now how can he continue to help Jaden Daniels grow? Now how can he continue to mature this offense? Because again, they were walking that razor's edge for a long time. Fourth down conversions, crazy percentages, third downs, like you don't want to be living there all the time. And so now can you kind of blossom the offense in a way that you couldn't before? So again, it's cool that Kliff's aware of that, but now I'm kind of excited to see what he can do when that restriction's not there anymore and he can color outside the lines a little bit. So hopefully that's what Laremy Tunsil allows him to do. Hopefully he plays at a crazy high level, because if he does, man, this offense, again, just from that one piece being added, could be drastically different.
So then let's, before we get to the defense stuff, talk about where we ended with Mina, which is the Jaden part of it. Well, we think about how good Adam Peters has been and what are the chances that he's kind of creeping up towards the top of those GM rankings next year. Why do you think he deserves more credit than she does? Because that feels like very sports talk show that I hate. But struck you about the way she processed that you thought was interesting and
noteworthy? Yeah, I was just surprised because she was just like, you couldn't screw it up. Like there were three awesome dudes there, but I think you can screw it up. I think we've seen people screw it up. I think there's been generational, like look no farther than Trevor Lawrence, right? Look no farther than Justin Herbert at points in his career. Like I think Justin Herbert's a heck of a football player, but there were times where he was mismanaged and it hurt him. It hurt his development, hurt the team's development. And we've talked about this a ton. And, you know, part of it is because we cover the team every single day.
Sure.
And she's maybe not as familiar with it. But, like, I look at what they did in terms of saying, hey, you're not the starter right away. Marcus Mariota's the starter, right? And not only bringing Marcus Mariota as a great mentor, but having Kliff come in and build an offense around him. Look at what they did with Williams up in Chicago. Like, that offense was tough. Very difficult for a young quarterback to manage. They could have done that. They could have screwed it up, right? Drake May behind a terrible offensive line. What was the first free agent moves that they made here when Adam came in? We're going to build the offensive line. We're going to find those.
Like, well, as you even before to, that, the first thing was we're going to get you a safety blanket, and his name is Zach Ertz because he was available before free agency even opened last year.
And they made those consistently good, strong decisions. And I can't, every year you're like, man, this is a bad environment for a quarterback. And when the offseason started, I was like, this is a bad environment. But they slowly built something up around him. So the way they handled him, the way he didn't have to do all this crazy media stuff. Like, I just think you, as an organization, you deserve credit for that. Cause like you can have the most talented guy in the world, but if you mismanage it and you don't handle it effectively. And the other thing I want to just point to too is like, you know, Adam is, he said this multiple places and I believe him because I've heard it from other people outside of Adam, that Jaden Daniels was his number one player ahead of Caleb Williams, ahead of Drake May. And so to have that evaluation so locked in on whatever he saw, the decision-making, the quick feet, the quick release, that playmaking moxie, you know, Mina said that he wasn't a true playmaker in college. He wasn't a playmaker in terms of throwing on the run, but he was a playmaker with his legs. And I think there's a distinction there. And so identifying what that can be and how you can manage that, I think is extremely important. So I look at all those decisions, and if you reverse them, if you make the opposite decision in those cases, this could go drastically different, right? And I think that's one thing I would point to and just be like, hey, like there is credit that is deserving there, even though Jaden Daniels is a tremendous talent.
This is probably a podcast episode in itself that nobody wants because everyone just wants to be like, we got Jaden, we're the best, let's keep it moving forward. But like a fun hypothetical is like, what happens if Drake is here? What happens if Caleb is here? And both of them are better than where they are in their current situations.
Yes.
Like 100%, straight up, no doubt.
100%.
And that And I think that becomes an interesting thing. And I feel like the way we were talking about with Mino was more of like just making the pick of Jaden versus Drake right. versus Caleb. And sure. I do think that, like, you know, what you said in terms of that they would have taken Jaden number one had they had the number one pick, like, then you get a lot more credit because everyone said it should have been Caleb, right? They didn't have to do that. And so how do you, you know, like, how do you give credit for something that they didn't actually have to do of step out on that ledge? But I do think, like, to your point, the organizational and where you draw the line between a guy like Adam versus other people in the organization and obviously Dan in the locker room, it's hard and it's blurry, but like that actually in its own way is a compliment to the way that the Commanders have this thing set up, is that they are all in lockstep together. And so I get what she's saying of like, all these guys were awesome and they've done a good job organizationally, that I don't know how much credit you get for picking one over the other, because they all probably would have been some level of successful. But I also get what you're saying of like, that in itself is worthy of praise at,
right.
Hey, this is how the best organizations operate. So I kind of get what both of you are saying, and now everyone's going to be mad at me in the comments for being mealy-mouthed in the middle.
Well, I think it's a great point, because I think when you listen to her show, like, one of the things she does a really good job of is making distinctions between the coaches. You should definitely check out the podcast, by the way. It was a really, I listened.
Yeah, the most recent one she did with Kevin Clark, they ranked the top five coaches and GMs, and you know, the point that you're about to bring up, I thought was a really good one.
Yeah, so like, she does a really good job of being like, this is what the coach does, this is what the GM does, right? And I think, like, when you look at it, you're like, man, like, these are great points. These are why these guys are special in their professions, right? But the thing that gets me is, like, here, it's both of them. Like, they're working together to create the ecosystem. And so I'd be really curious to see, because again, like, I think there's, the way she's ranking them is different than the way I think the value of their relationship is here. Right. The reason it's so good is because they work so well together, like you were alluding to. There, she's drawing stark distinctions between this is the coach, this is the GM. And I think that's what makes this organization special. And that's what makes the handling of Jaden Daniels special, too. That's what makes the handling of every pick they've made special. Right. Is that there's this, Adam understands what Dan wants and needs. He understands the value assigned in the draft. He understands the value assigned in free agency and trade, makes those decisions, and then he trusts Dan to develop those products. Like Jerzon Newton, like, one of the things that she talked about was how much Jerzon had improved over the course of the season. You see that. That doesn't just happen. Like, obviously you need the right person, but you need the right coaches. Like, I look at Darrell Tapp and the energy and juice he brings, what Ryan does for the pass rushers. Like, they're counting on those guys to develop and be something more in a way that other teams I've been on can't do, right? You need a higher floor player because you're not counting on the staff to develop. You need more veterans in the building because the staff can't develop. So that's where it's interesting. And that distinction is interesting. And it'll be interesting to see as this team progresses, like, if they do eventually break in kind of in their own right as a front office person or as a coach.
Yeah. And let's say, like, for this year that Quinn is the 12th or 13th best coach. And I'm just putting that out there because they didn't have DQ in their top 10, either Mina or Kevin. Right. And that might sound really offensive to Commanders fans, but like the guys they list, like, yeah,
these are good coaches. They went through that list and I was like, oh, he should be in here. And then I like listened to him. I was like, damn, these are like some really good.
Yeah. And the separation between
coaches.
Yeah. The separation between maybe DQ at 13 and some of the guys that are at 7 are like, if you want to flip them, that's fine with me. Right. But let's say, for the sake of argument, right? DQ is 13th and Adam is 11th, right? And it just it's 1 year, whatever. Together, they might be in the top 10. Like, if you take the pairings and the fit, like, and 1+1=3 type of stuff, I think that the how well they work well together certainly elevates them both. Which leads us to DQ is going to have to be on his stuff defensively this year, because I think that I don't think we disagree with Mina or anybody in their comments section or whoever. They're like, it would be sick if they could get another pass rusher. If Trey Hendrickson finds a way to weasel his way out of Cincinnati for something that is affordable, absolutely, I'm interested in Trey Hendrickson. Like, getting another pass rusher in here would be great. But there's a cost element to that, and there is just the market doesn't provide you a lot of opportunities to get pass rushers. And so I see both the point that she was making, that everyone's making, that I have also made, like, yeah, it'd be cool if they went and got another edge, with the reality that they might have actually done the best that the market allowed them to do.
Yeah, I think this is one where it's like my talent evaluation part of me feels differently than my coach evaluation, right? Because I kind of try to look at it through both lenses, right? So obviously, like, I'm like, they need to be more talented at edge rusher, right? But then I look at last season, and the thing that was the biggest bane of this defense's existence was their ability to consistently do what they were supposed to do on first and second down. So what we did is we went out and we found a bunch of people who can do what they're supposed to do well on first and second down. Like, I look at Eddie Goldman, like, is he a priority free agent for a lot of teams? No, but does he fill an issue that came up from a coaching standpoint last year in terms of being able to sit double teams, own a gap on the interior? Yes. Dietrich Wise, is he going to blow anybody's socks off in terms of his ability to rush the passer? No, but has he played a lot of football and is he incredibly consistent at being in the right gap and fitting runs correctly? Yes. And so I look at that and I say, if they can get more consistency from that group, right?
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
They showed the ability to create pressure without the front four in that first Tampa Bay game. Like, I went back and watched that game and I was like, this is incredible, right? They're able to find one-on-ones, they're able to create overloads, they're able to blitz linebackers. They can do that on third and 10 in a way that most teams can't. And Joe Witt Jr. has shown the ability to do that, right? So if they can just manage first and second down better, I think they're going to be a better defense. And I think that's ultimately what you're hoping for, is saying, man, we can't find this top flight pass rusher, right? But we can find four dudes who are going to do exactly what they're supposed to do in the front. We're going to get a little bit better in the secondary, and then we're going to be better on first, second down, so we can be better on third down. And she also talked about the game flow thing, which I think is an excellent, excellent point. Like, if this offense is what we think it's going to be, they're going to be able to play with a lead a lot more consistently, right? So that's where I look at it. And again, that's the coach in me, right? But the talent evaluator's like, dude, it'd be nice if we had somebody you just throw out there and win a one-on-one. You know what I mean? Like, that's what
it would be nice. Like, that's the thing. It's like 100% agreed. It would be nice. I also don't know that they missed on any opportunities to do that necessarily.
Who would they have done in free agency? Like, who would they have brought in free agency?
Nobody, like, I would have loved to sign Josh Sweat to the number that he signed with in Arizona, but I think he wanted to go play with Jonathan Gannon again. And like, that's, I wasn't going to overpay for Josh Sweat.
Yeah. So he's not, again, like, I like Josh Sweat. I've always liked Josh Sweat, but is he a top 10 pass rusher in the NFL?
No,
he's not. And I think he's very good. Don't get me wrong. Like, would I like to have him here? Absolutely. But again, like, if that's the number one guy, is that moving the needle? Is he like the guy that teams have to be sort of crazy aware of? Like, when you watch Josh Sweat, yes, he's really good. Can he win one-on-ones? Yes, but not with the same consistency as those top 10 guys in the league. And I think that's the distinction I would make there, is there wasn't that guy to go pay and bring him in.
Well, and then you even go a step further and say, okay, $19 million for Josh Sweat, or $5 million for Dietrich Wise, $3 million for Eddie Goldman, and like whatever other money was spent on that D-line as a whole, and that gets you way better on first and second down than one Josh Sweat would be. And right. Is that actually a better way to be a better defense and not just, say, accumulate sacks or guys with double-digit sacks, which is not actually the point of the sport. It's to be good at defense.
And that's something you brought up before, and I think it's a really good point with the Trey Hendrickson thing, right? It's like, he is a great player on a terrible defense. And like, all of the impact of those 17 sacks is negated because the defense can't support him, right? So now you've kind of done it the other way. You're saying, we're going to build the floor of the defense. We don't have that ceiling. We don't have that player that really brings that tremendous pass rush upside, but the floor is consistently better. And is that going to make our team better? And my gut as a coach says, yes, you've got four new dudes that you can trust to do exactly what you're supposed to do. And that seems like the right decision.
All right. That's our show for today. Thanks again to Mina for coming on. Great conversation with her as always. Logan, looking ahead to next week, I truly, honest to God, have no idea what we're doing next week. We'll do a mailbag early in the week.
I sent you some mailbag
stuff. Yeah, you sent me some good mailbag questions. They were long questions, but that's okay. I feel like I don't want to be insulting about how long they were, but in the same way that Mina like realized when she talked about my email that she made it sound like I sent her a novel, and which was not not the case, which is why she was like, not long. But we do have some good mailbag questions that some folks have sent. Logan, I've got a couple of stashed as well. So we'll do that on Monday. We'll figure out what we're doing on Thursday. Maybe try to get another guest on the show. So anybody that you want to hear from, leave us a comment on YouTube at the Team 980, at 106.7 The Fan, at Craig Hoffman. You can also shoot us a note for your mailbag questions at HoffmanShow.com. Or if you're an Instagram user, that's an easy way to get it in, at Hoffman.sports or at Logan_Paulson82. All right, that's enough ways to contact us. Thanks for listening. We really appreciate it. And we'll see you next week back here on Take Connect.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.